far I want to know.
House Transportation meeting is come to order. Present are representatives Salmon, Thomas, Elkins, and Chair, Co-Chair Elkins and Co-Chair Gatto. We do have a quorum. We'll have before us, in the interest of having Robin Taylor be able to attend another meeting somewhere else, he asked me if I would do HB 432, which is the Yukon River Ferry System, first. Following that, we'll deal with the HDR 18, the Federal Maritime Safety Act, and finally, we'll conclude with HB 417, Safety Corridors. So we'll begin right off the bat with the Yukon Ferry System. Representative Salmon.
2 hours or less. Oh. Boy, do I have questions for this guy.
I have an egg timer.
Don't let him tempt you.
Thank you. Thank you, co-chairs, Representative Gatto, Representative Elkins, Representative Bill, for listening. Anyway, I'd like to thank you for your support and urge your passing this bill out today, if possible. It took me all winter just to come up with not the idea, but just to, you know, kind of, when you get a bill, when you first get a bill, you think about the ideas and the pros and cons about this bill. And we've tabulated the pros and we tabulated the cons. And what we came up is basically with this, is to get us some sort of a study just to see what the Yukon River can produce, you know. And what we come out with this, the basic economics of the villages that it will impact, probably around 30 villages on the Yukon River from Eagle all the way down to the mouth of the Yukon, which it will impact if it goes that far. And we always hear the administration referring to ferries to connect to roads. And on this Yukon River system, which includes probably Tanana River, you know, they have a Utana barge line at this time, which probably wouldn't compete with the ferry system. But what we had in mind is that the tours, both from Fairbanks and from Eagle, which is, you know, the highway system, could connect to some of the areas where the steamships used to travel back in the late 1800s, and to offer this to the public and to advertise statewide and nationwide or worldwide, I think it'll have a, you know, great impact on the tourism in Alaska. That's one of the reasons, that's the plus side of the pros and cons of this. And I think it'll have a great impact on the area, infrastructures, which will have to be built up. It doesn't have to be major because you're going to be operating only 4 months out of the year, which will be May to probably September, when the tourism, you know, is most in our state. And the other pros about it is the transportation of both passengers, vehicles, and personal goods, the residential goods, you know, to make life a lot easier on the Yukon River, which is most of them is supplied by the air service. And the five areas that I didn't mention that has a road to it is, we start off Nenana, which has a big Utana barge line that's been stationed there for years and years. Then we have Manly, which is right up the Yukon, I mean, Nenana, Tanana River, probably about, oh, I'd say maybe 50 miles. Then we have the other road system, which is the bridge, the pipeline bridge.
Yukon River.
Yeah, it's on the Dalton Highway. And the Circle, which comes to a dead end at Circle, the Circle Highway, Steese Highway. Then we have the Eagle. And there's, you know, other possibilities, like maybe going to Dawson, but they all have a tour pontoon boat that runs back and forth there just for tourist purposes. So those are some of the possibilities. And this, the other possibility is that it could work on some other rivers too, such as the Kuskokwim River, and the there's a river right down by Wrangell, I think it's Stikine, if I'm not pronouncing it right, but Stikine could be they could run that from, it's got to be shallow draft from Wrangell up to the Casper or something like that. There's another highway up there anyway that connects to the main.
Cassiar.
Yeah, Cassiar. That's the highway that it could connect. And from what I understand, it's like a four-hour ride, you know, just from Wrangell to Cassiar. And that's the other possibility. And what it'll provide, it'll be Coast Guard approved, which will be, you know, there'll be a lot of safety mechanism, you know, planned into this, which will be a lot better than what we have at this time. And, you know, health-wise and, you know, for your food and stuff like that. But, I mean, those are some of the items that we could, you know, incorporate into the planning. But other than that, that's what I have on this House Bill 432. If there's any questions, I'll be more than willing to answer.
Representative Elkins, go ahead.
Representative Salmon, did you get any estimates at all of what a study would cost?
Representative Gatto through the chair, or the Elkins through the chair. This came out this morning about 11 o'clock. And I think it looks like about $250,000 for the study, and that was brought in earlier. So,
just by way of information, on the Yukon, I've been from Dawson, Canada, to Eagle, Alaska, I don't know how many times, 12, 15, by canoe. And I know there's a ferry that runs there. It's called the Yukon Queen.
Yeah.
Boy, is it fast.
Mm-hmm.
4 hours down and 6 hours up. But that, I believe that's private. So it's possible to make money on a ferry, Mr. Taylor. It's possible to make money on a ferry because if it's a private organization, I hope they're making money. They get a lot of tourist traffic, though.
Wouldn't be there for work.
So that's just for information that some ferries actually do well. Number two is the big concern I have with this is not Section 1, which says including a study on the feasibility of expanding to Yukon River locations, but Section 2. Section 2 says, in the existing language, the department shall, this is a killer, construct, purchase, or lease ferry terminal facilities at locations, including communities along the Yukon River, which was added. If indeed we pass this out the way it is, we're directing the state to construct, purchase, and lease ferry terminals and facilities, not for $250,000. I mean, we need a different fiscal note to put that language in Section 2.
Mr. Chairman, can I respond to that?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Well, that maybe Robin could probably answer this a little better than I do, but the way we, I know it sounds like we're going to be purchasing, but it has to be with the okay of the Department of Transportation, and I'm sure they're not going to just be, you know, as soon as we pass this bill, they're just because it's in there, we're going to be go ahead and start purchasing all these items, and I think they'll have to look at it and study it and see what kind of costs we're looking at over. What kind of feasibility study needs to take place, and I think that's what we really need to look at. But
I would suggest that come back with the department may, and we'll ask Senator Taylor to come up here and give us maybe his thoughts on this. I was thinking the department may construct, purchase, or lease depending on the results of the Section 1 study would be something that then would not have that enormous fiscal note attached to it. At the moment, the $250,000, we're doing a study. The studies cost more money than I ever dreamed, but they just do. So, did you want Senator Taylor to comment?
Yeah, he could comment, and we're always open to amendments, you know? So, yeah, go ahead.
Senator Taylor, I would appreciate it if you would read the language here and tell me if I'm correct or incorrect.
Thank you, Representative Gatto and Chairman Elkins. Robin Taylor, Alaska Marine Highway System. I think that the saving language, which has been in there from the time this legislation was first passed, is the words "it selects," which has left it discretionary with the department. It gives the department full authorization to move forward, purchase, construct, lease, etc., both vessels and terminal facilities, but does not require the department to do so. I wouldn't quarrel with your suggested modification of inserting "may." I think they both accomplish the same.
Okay. Good catch. I didn't get to that point of noticing how important that those two words were. I just kind of skimmed too fast by them. And Representative Salmon, did you want to continue to maybe come back with a CS on this, or a sponsor substitute or so? Or did you want to make allow some amendments right here?
I think amendments will be a lot, lot better, with, you know, especially if we need to include, you know, some other rivers on there.
Okay, well, I'm going to propose a conceptual amendment that we ensure that the department is not required to construct or maintain or purchase facilities until such time that the legislature approves the expansion of the marine highway system to the Yukon, to the rivers interior, to call it the interior river system, or
Yukon River
locations.
Is that after Section 2, paragraph A?
Yeah, it's in that, yeah.
The department is not required to
construct, maintain, operate, et cetera. And we'll leave it to the drafter to insert the language that is clearly states that we don't want the department to read this, that there's any requirement besides the study.
Couldn't we just say "may"? Doesn't "may" just do the same thing?
I think it does, but conceptually, I just wanted to make it pretty clear that it could be. I don't no idea what this fiscal note would be, but it'd be a doozy. Is that a salmon?
If we stick a "may" in there, you know, the department, you know, may construct, or you know, that will change the laws in the book too. So, I mean, we're not changing only this one right here. We're changing all the laws in the book. So these laws are basically on the books that we're looking at. Yes. So if we do change it, then it affects the main ferry system.
Yes, it would.
It would. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And, okay. And this is the original organic or authorization language under which the entire marine highway system operates as far as terminals and their facilities. So We'd want to be very careful in the way we did that. That's why I felt the words "it selects" probably takes care of the problem, because it would leave the discretionary to the department. The department, by the way, cannot go out and purchase anything unless you guys are going to budget it and approve it. So I think this probably is good language to have in there to give them that authorization. It may be a bit premature until the study is completed. You might want to delete it at this point until after the study is completed. The first paragraph certainly requires that a study be done and that it be made part of the overall plan. And the third section is kind of just a generic statement saying that people will benefit from regular service. We certainly have no objection to that. It's a finding, in essence, by the legislature providing legislative intent that ferry service would benefit these communities. We don't quarrel with that.
You know, I'm surprised that this original language doesn't say shall construct subject to approval by the legislature, and add the following statements.
Well, oftentimes, we've had to move with some dispatch, and these are not usually major items when it comes to acquiring property for a terminal facility. Usually, those are always caught up in, we don't build terminal facilities without federal funding. That has to go through the STIP process. It has to go through the full legislative appropriation process during your capital budget, and that's how we get to those facilities. So you actually do approve these things.
It's that other part. The department shall repair and maintain these facilities, construction and purchasing under the subsection. And I'm thinking that that's a pretty broad approval for spending state money right there.
It is interesting. We've not utilized it in recent years. In fact, the legislative drafters are very reluctant to put the word shall in. So that may give you some idea about how old this language is. I think you'll find that this language reaches all the way back to the original enabling legislation.
Which is how long ago?
Probably 1962 or three.
So
a year or two after statehood.
40-year-old language.
It's worked fairly well.
Oh, I don't know. We're spending, what is it, $2 for every dollar and $3 for every dollar in revenue.
Said the language is working good.
Yeah, the language working well. Well, I'm.
Well, we also get, Mr. Chairman, we also get five highway dollars for every one we spend. So I think there isn't a highway in the state that makes money. So I don't think that's an argument.
We don't have a quorum anymore.
Well, he's sitting right there. He can move.
I'm sorry. I said. Who was sitting there? They snuck out.
They forget.
It's been a long day.
So I'll make a conceptual amendment that we change shall to may and leave in its lex
and drop your other language?
And let it go at that.
Okay.
Right.
So just a shall we're moving?
Shall to may.
And I guess Representative Elkins is commenting that it wouldn't even have to be conceptual. Just change shall to may. And
make a comment, Mr. Chairman. I think you know what this is. You got your work cut out for you because, and I'm going to support this bill. But you know, this year we're fighting to even to get the 10% that they've cut on the ferry budget back in, and we'd like to add about 20% back in. And so we're going to need all your support from you just to keep. We're trying to build the ferry system up to where it was 25 years ago, in quality and vessels and stuff. So. I mean, what you're trying to do would fit in with our long-range, with our goals for sure, but just bear in mind that there are people in this body that would eliminate it if they could, the whole system. So the coastal communities have a big fight, and I know you've been attending the coastal caucuses, and I appreciate that. So that's all, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Taylor, actually, just curiously, did the Marine Highway system always encompass the current facilities it now has, or did it begin only as a half of what it is now? Or
it began with three boats, the Taku, the Matanuska, and the Malaspina,
and serving essentially just from
south
Wrangell
to Alaska. No, it went all the way in those days from Seattle, Washington, clear through to Skagway, and has done so. That's what you might call the core or base route. We also operated out of Prince Rupert all the way through to Skagway at that time. So you had three vessels that basically went up and down the archipelago in that fashion. Today, through evolution and expansion over the years, we added both Laconi and Aurora. That was to provide service to the outer villages so that they finally had some level of service. Craig, Klawock, Heidelberg, they all came on through the Hollis Terminal. That then has since evolved into the IFA operation, which I might add, I originally funded the first $50,000 that created that operation because they were getting such lousy service on Prince of Wales. But we then also moved with the 235 class, the Aurora and the Laconi. We moved to Ahuna, to Angoon, to Cake, out to Pelican. That service was expanded. Whew, I'd need help there, Representative. Bill Skibby. But probably 20-some years ago now, that expansion occurred. We also expanded across Gulf with the Kennecott when it was purchased, because it's primarily designed as an ocean-going vessel with certification. We had also the Tustamina, and along with it, the full operation in Prince William Sound and out the chain was the combination of the Tustamina and the Bartlett. The Bartlett has been sold, as you know, about 2.5 years ago. We are having the Tusty rebuilt right now in Bellingham. It'll be back on the run here in about another month and a half. But your basic core service started off Pacific Northwest up through here, expanded then to provide the first service into Prince William Sound and out to Kodiak and the chain. And that is still your basic core level of service today. It's one run coming out of Bellingham, goes through to Skagway. Normally that's the Columbia. One run coming out of Prince Rupert that goes through to Skagway, it makes that trip twice a week. And then the Laconia services the villages.
A Yukon River ferry would certainly be stationed at some idea?
Well, in 1973, the Department of Transportation did a study. I've got this as an extra copy. I have more copies out of the office. He provided one to Representative Salmon's office as soon as he inquired about this concept for legislation. There's an interesting proposal within that you would have a ferry shallow draft configured in such a way that it would push a small barge in front of it. The barge would have about an additional 6 to 8 inches of draft to it, so that as you're going up or down the river, the barge hits first, and the boat then can maneuver to get itself off the sandbars and stuff. I have, if you want, Mr. Chairman, I can give you a quick presentation on the whole concept.
I'm going to pass on that. We have an hour, and we've got a couple more bills.
Okay.
But I will be back to you, because
you want it.
Actually, the Tusty is being overhauled or simply repaired?
Oh, no, major overhaul. About a almost $3.5 million project. It's taking place in Fairhaven Shipyards in Bellingham, Washington.
Is that federal money to do something like
always.
That?
Yes, always. A portion of each of these contracts, oftentimes, though, is state money, general fund appropriated each year, for vessel repair and maintenance. And to the extent we can, we try to keep those contracts in state, either in Mr. Pruitt's yard in Seward or at Alaska Ship and Dry Dock in Ketchikan to provide for Alaskan employment.
Okay. And I know you want to leave, even though the next bill I kind of wish you'd be here for. But
I would like a copy of that, Robin.
Sure.
Here
why don't
you
just give Attorney Elkins that one.
We'll take it.
It's very interesting.
Okay.
We have, as I show you there, looked into these concepts in the past. We are moderately supportive, so to speak, of this legislation, because, like you just indicated, we don't know where it may go. But with the struggles we're currently going through just to fund this budget, I would really caution my good representative that if you were to have all of these 30 villages reliant upon the state ferry system, just as the isolated communities of Southeast Alaska, Prince William Sound, and the Aleutian Chain are reliant upon it at this time, you might find yourself in significant jeopardy should you be facing the concerns that we're facing today as far as increased cost, and not have anything then to back it up with. The private sector, as you said, can provide and does provide service where it's economically feasible. That's the barge service that currently is going up and down that river.
Okay.
They used to provide, if we go back 100 years, actual passage up and down the river, full distance. But you have to remember, those are days in which huge amounts of money was being spent on gold exploration and development, and also on other resource exploration. You have actually seen at various times significant amounts of freight going up and down the river, which would indicate that right now we don't have that. And to just go in and provide it with no revenue base or very little revenue base is going to be a costly operation. So I caution from that perspective. I think it's important, and I think the representative has raised a very good point in saying, we deserve a study on this, and we deserve to know what the costs are and what kind of service could be provided to us, and that's why we've submitted the fiscal note to you that we have.
Okay. Is Utana Barge Lines private?
Yes.
Do they carry passengers or just freight?
Just freight.
So if you wanted a ride on it, that's not available. How about a vehicle?
Yes. The problem with the Utana Barge Line is that they're, like if you were to go to Fort Yukon, it's only maybe maybe once or twice a year mm-hmm. they go up there, you know. The upper portion, you know, like Tanana on up, they don't go there too often.
But that's how you get vehicles to yes. Fort Yukon and mm-hmm. or out of Fort Yukon for that matter too. Okay. Is $250,000 the right amount of money for a study?
We really vacillated on that, and depending on the depth to which you want to go, of course, you're going to spend a great deal more money. We felt that with $250,000, we could adequately assess the situation and promptly get back to the representative and to this legislature with some result.
Good. Representative Elkins?
How long is that river free of ice, Woody?
It's usually from middle of May till about end of September.
Okay. That's question one. Then I have a, Mr. Chairman, I just want to tease Robin a little bit. I introduced the legislation to Ketchikan Gateway Borough to put up the bonds for guarantee the bonds so they could build the vessels that you find.
Yeah.
I'll find it.
We've all played a role.
That's my point, yeah.
That ferry at Dawson City, I believe that's government operated. must be because it's free. Get on and go back and forth.
Mr. Chairman, State of Washington, which moves 22 million people a year and has the largest ferry fleet on the West Coast, that was privately owned and operated by an operation called the Black Ball Ferry Line, I think up until about the early 70s. Now, Black Ball Ferry Line only retained one route. They operate, I believe, between Port Angeles on the Olympic Peninsula across to Victoria. And that is still a money-making run for them. That's where they're operating.
Okay, we have an amendment before us. Is there an objection to the amendment? Seeing and hearing none, the amendment passes. We have a bill before us.
We just got to move back over here. And just a comment, you forgot the Wickersham, Senator Taylor.
Pardon?
You forgot the Wickersham in your history.
Yes.
And a couple fast berries.
A couple fast berries. Yeah, Mr. Chair, I make a motion we move House Bill 432 as amended version 24-LS-1631/A from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing no objections, HB 432 moves up the river.
That a boy.
Up the river, yeah.
Up the lazy river.
Distance to go.
I don't care if you carry this, but most
of it's yeah.
There's waterways. I don't care.
What controversial bill are you bringing up next?
Which is my bill.
No, I don't. Yeah, I said that.
Okay. Next, we're going to take HJR 18, which is the bill that I'm sponsoring. And it is a bill that asks the feds for some clarification. I have a committee aide here who is anxious to. Comment, and so Mr. Rice.
I think, for the record, Cody Rice, staff to Representative Carl Gatto. I think everyone on the committee has heard this resolution before. This resolution simply asks Congress to clarify a specific provision of the Maritime Transportation Security Act of 2002, and that subsection is 445. That subsection was put in place by Senator Ted Stevens with the stated intent of excluding or prohibiting what was called, I believe, an ad valorem tax that Yakutat had imposed. Yakutat wanted to impose a head tax on cruise ship passengers that entered the Bay of Yakutat but didn't actually stop at the port. And subsection 445 of the Maritime Transportation Security Act, which Representative Don Young authored, prohibited that. In the meantime, that specific provision has been interpreted rather broadly and has the potential to invalidate a number of taxes existing and proposed nationwide, including, from what I understand, current litigation in Idaho and potential litigation in Missouri. I can answer any questions on this. Can talk as long as you're willing to listen.
Representative Thomas?
Just so happens we have the good senator speaking tomorrow. Maybe the sponsor can address this one-on-one.
Through the chair, Representative Thomas, I'm sure that's a possibility. I'm also under the impression that this is something that they're looking at addressing again this year in the Coast Guard bill. I had been in discussion with both Representative Young's office and Senator Stevens' office in years past on this particular issue, and they had expressed some interest in clarifying this issue through the Coast Guard Act. That didn't occur last year. They're looking at doing it again this year. I think this would be a strong statement from the legislature of support, rather than one individual legislator saying, hey, we may have some legal concerns in Alaska and nationwide.
Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just more of a general comment, since nobody came to my office saying to vote no or stop this, I am not going to complain. So evidently, some people want clarity, so I've not heard from any of the opposing companies who normally call, so I have no more questions.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's one more thing. We have an initiative that will be on the ballot,
yep.
And it would be much better, I believe, if we had clarification, if indeed the initiative passes or doesn't pass, to know before that what the meaning of is, specific meaning. If this was meant to be only if a ship doesn't stop there, you can't tax it, or if it meant to interpret it that even the inland waters of the state, which I cherish as states' rights, did you mean to say that the feds can control what our thoughts, plans, ideas are for the inland waters of the state? And so for me, it was a states' rights issue as well as a clarification of what the act was intended.
One more quick comment, then, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Just for the comment for the good representative from Ketchikan, I pointed out that if this head tax stays in, we have to spend the money on issues towards the cruise ship industry. I've followed that Ketchikan bridge long enough to know that they had to raise that bridge up to allow the cruise ships to go under. Maybe we can fund that whole ship, I mean, the whole bridge down there with this cruise ship monies.
You know, sometimes if the law says the money must,
right,
not shall or may, but must be used for facilities, then the new ships are higher than the original proposal now. We've got a $1 billion ship in the design phase, $1 billion, and it's higher than the previous one, which allowed the Ketchikan Bridge to be high enough to let it under. Now we got to raise the bridge again.
No, we don't have to.
We don't.
Well,
if a new ship gets built,
they can go around.
Originally, the first bridge was down where the South Coast properties were. We own the South Coast properties, and then we were going to give a small shot across, but the cruise ships wanted to go through, so they moved it to where it's at and lifted it half a mile high to go under them. So I think
the FAA didn't want the bridge on the north end.
Yeah. But we're not going to say that, Representative. We're trying to get the cruise ship monies to pay for your bridge.
Yeah, I understand. I understand that. I understand that.
My wife said, how come you don't build a drawbridge? And I said,
well, you gotta,
I don't know.
You got to get between them then.
Right, I understand that. But when you start talking about building a bridge higher and higher and higher, we don't have, you know, we don't have a lot of ship traffic.
Let's get back to discussion of the bill.
Okay. We're back on the
resolution.
Bill. Back on the resolution, HJR 18, Representative Elkins.
Yeah, you know where I normally stand on any kind of a head tax, but I am going to support this resolution because I think if, I hate referendum government, but if the referendum gets lucky and gets elected, I think we're going to need clarity, so I'll support it.
Okay. Any comments from, any more comments from the committee? I'll open it up to public testimony. Anyone from the audience? No one online? Would you mind making a motion for me, Representative Co-Chair Elkins? Or would you rather leave it to me?
No. I can do it. Just let me get it back out here.
Oh, I object. Oh, no. Huh? Too soon.
Mr. Chairman, I move Joint House Resolution Number 18 with version G with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes, if any.
Are there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, HJR 18 moves. We can now move on to safety corridors. In front of us now is House Bill 417 for its first hearing, recommended by the governor. The traffic safety corridors.
All these rural roads.
And in front of us is my best friend, new best friend. So we need you to identify yourself and affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, John McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner of Transportation for Highways and Facilities. First off, did I hear you say correctly that we have until 2:30 for this? You said
we want
a one-hour meeting.
An hour if we could.
I will do my best to be brief but complete.
If he has to leave, I can stay. So
I don't think we need to limit it to 2:30. But you know, any time we can do that, that's just fine. Well, normally we go from 1:30.
Chairman Gatto's helping me out today, so because of my voice. So
I will do what I can to be brief but complete. I do have a lot of backup today for this particular bill. Behind me, and it's really comforting to have that. There's a number of people behind me that can probably answer just about any question you might have. Kurt Smith, Department of Transportation State Highway Traffic and Safety Engineer. Cindy Cashin, who heads up the State Highway Safety Office. With Alaska State Troopers, we have Lieutenant James Helgo and Cliff Stone with Department of Public Safety, who is their legislative liaison, and then Mary Soroki, Department of Transportation's legislative liaison.
For questions? Or
if there happen to be any questions that I stumble through. And
so we
and
have a substantial staff to answer questions.
Yes, and I think that just illustrates the importance that the department places in this bill and the concept of establishing traffic safety corridors. To be fairly brief, what this does is allows the Department of Transportation, in consultation with public safety and other local police departments and other law enforcement agencies, to establish a traffic safety corridor on a segment of highway that has exhibited higher than average fatal and serious accident rates. We'll be establishing rules through our traffic manual that determine when a traffic corridor is turned on, as well as when it is turned off. Both of them be significant public events. One of the highlights of this bill allows for the double traffic fines to be imposed and collected in these traffic corridors whenever there's an offense committed there. One of the also important parts of this bill is that it's not just enough to impose double traffic fines and identify a traffic safety corridor. It's also important to have increased enforcement in that traffic safety corridor. And the department, by using some of its safety sanction funds, will be assisting public safety and other police departments in providing increased levels of enforcement in these areas.
Does the increased revenue from double fines pay for some of the or any of the enforcement, or does it just go back into the GF? And I'm not sure if fines go to the GF or to the department.
Mr. Chairman, the intent is that the fines will come back through the department to pay for the additional enforcement. There is, in the Senate version of this bill, which is Senate Bill 261, we've had an amendment in there that improves that situation, the ability for those fines, those additional fines, to come back to the department to help support that additional enforcement.
I thought the Senate bill was 109.
Representative Elkins, that is the one dealing with double fines in school zones. That was a bill that was introduced last year. These two companion bills, House Bill 417 and its Senate companion is SB 261. SB 261 has, in fact, today it passed out of Senate Finance, and it's waiting transmittal to the floor.
Do you know if they amended it?
They have, well, on the Senate version, they made one small amendment today. They made a change to shall, or a may to a shall. That was just to ensure that the Department of Transportation is consulting and communicating with not just the state troopers, Department of Public Safety, but also with the local police departments or any federal agency that may have jurisdiction, enforcement jurisdiction in that area. An example would be in the Chugach State Forest. The Forest Service does have law enforcement personnel there, and they could enforce, and they would enforce these laws on our highways as they see them being broken. Now, one of the things we have here, the Department Central Region made a number of maps illustrating accidents on the roads, and they are very graphic illustrations of the problems that we have in some of these road sections.
Those are I'm going to tell you, those are some of the best maps I've ever seen for or illustrating a point. It's very clear, and if you'll identify the reds and the whites, that would help enormously.
Yeah, a couple of things. You see the little boxes. They dictate, the yellow and the blue boxes, they dictate what the event was, what the accident occurred, a number of fatalities. The blue ones are specifically marked that color to show that drugs and alcohol were involved. So there was some substance abuse involved in the blue boxes. The yellow ones may have had alcohol involved, but we don't know. At least the records don't indicate that they were. But they show that there was it's a driver behavior issue. You know, driving too fast for conditions, unsafe speed.
I just wanted to point out the red dots were fatalities, and the white or the empty dots were fatalities.
Well, yes, Representative Gatto, on that road segment, this particular one is the Seward Highway from Potter Marsh to Girdwood. The white dots indicate an accident occurred prior to a highway realignment or major reconstruction. The red dots indicate that the fatality occurred after a highway realignment or major reconstruction. And what that indicates is, you know, we've made the road wider, better, passing lanes, but it hasn't reduced the number of accidents because, for a number of reasons, the volume of traffic has increased, but also it's a driver behavior issue.
Speed.
And this bill is aimed at trying to get a handle on driver behavior by allowing us to increase enforcement and collect double traffic fines. And I don't mean to point out that of the four maps we have showing probably four of the, you know, top six in dangerous highway segments in the state, three of them happen to be within Mat-Su Borough.
One was Turnagain Arm, one was Palmer Wasilla. This is the Parks, and you have a fourth
one. This is the Parks Highway from Alaska Railroad Houston Crossing to Lucas Road, and then Pinnacoose Bay Road.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Thomas.
Yes. I guess, you know, during the seatbelt argument, they kept using the word rural. And when I looked up where the accidents were occurring, they were all in an urban area but on a rural road. And I couldn't get it across to my colleagues that it wasn't the rural people dying in car accidents. Because what it showed where the fatalities were mostly cars, and most of the people in the rural area, true rural area, have four-wheel drive vehicles on bigger. And so I lost that debate, but so the seatbelt law became mandatory. But I think it's very misleading when you call it rural, major rural routes. And I think when you're in a major urban area, which the Mat-Su and Anchorage brag about being the biggest urban area in Alaska, somehow you need to strike that rural so we don't have the tainted look on Woody and I about being we're safer drivers than what we see on these maps you've been showing us. But I think for clarity, I'd feel better if you say it was the urban rural roads or something like that, because you definitely I don't see Haynes on the chart or Beaver.
Representative Thomas, through the chair, you know, we have different, believe it or not, different issues here and a slightly different definition. What we don't want to include in the ability to create a traffic safety corridor would be an urban street or an urban highway going right through the middle of Anchorage. That would be urban. Those accidents are more intersection related and not due to a length of road.
But I guess, Mr. Chair, I'm saying the wrong definition. If it goes through a borough, the Anchorage borough, the Mat-Su borough, isn't that urban? I mean, that's maybe I'm just.
I understand exactly what you're saying. If connecting Anchorage and Mat-Su on a four-lane divided highway,
right,
that should be considered
urban.
Mm-hmm.
And going down to Girdwood too. But I could see your point. But I am, to me, I guess I see it very misleading when we hear rural and we. You know, we get picked on enough, and then to come out and people say most of the accidents happen in a rural area, and then they say, well, we don't even have 270. Some people die in every couple of years in the rural. So that's why I say it was kind of misleading.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. I'm just
point taken.
Yeah.
Yes.
And just a point.
Again, our intent is that it's not to apply to a city, a busy street in a city.
We just was so delicate and fragile, we get hurt easy.
Representative Thomas, we'll try and be a little more sensitive next time.
Heather Representative Boyd. Elkins?
John, I just want you to quit picking on me.
Woody and I feel so.
Look at the way we're sitting, Mary. The four against
Uh-oh.
The two.
And Mary's not here, so.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm trying to think of pick up where I was on this one. And actually, the point I was making is that as we looked at these dangerous stretches of road, you know, it was interesting that three of the top six just happened to be in Mat-Su, and those are all issues there where you've got driver behavior problems. We hope in those areas, and we're working with the Wasilla Police Department as well as the state troopers to increase enforcement in those areas. I think one of the graphic ones was Connect Goose Bay Road. You saw clusters of those fatalities. State troopers really appreciated getting that map because they can look at that map right there and just have the very graphic illustration of where they need to focus a little more of their enforcement.
Where to park.
Yeah.
Got it. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. And I would just like to point out, too, for the committee is a lot of the traffic that goes from the Wasilla north up to Big Lake Cutoff, in the summertime, you know, there's over 4 million people travel that road on their way up to interior Alaska. And so it's not so much the locals that are causing the problem, but, you know, we've all followed the motor roads that are going
through. All those rural people coming through.
All the people.
How about the non-residents?
Haines and stuff that are actually visiting. but I'd like to just point that out, and I think Mr. McKinnon could maybe testify to the fact that there is parts of the Mat-Su, particularly on south of the Big Lake Road, that he got to travel here a couple weeks ago, and whether he probably thinks that's somewhere rural.
Representative Newman, I would definitely say that there are parts of Mat-Su that fit the rural criteria very well. Yeah, Burma Road was a good one.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hate to see what your roads look like if I know what mine look like.
Ask him.
Yeah. You know, I believe also in your packet are some draft language that we would insert into our Alaska traffic manual, which would be where the criteria are established for creating these safety zones. We would like to see a 3-year fatal plus major injury accident rate per mile that exceeds 110% of the statewide average. And correspondingly, when after we've monitored one of these traffic safety corridors, that when the fatal plus major injury rate per mile falls below the statewide average for a 3-year period, then we can decommission one. And it's our thought that when one of these corridors is created, that it be created with a certain amount of publicity so that people are aware of it, that there's a dangerous stretch of road, and that they need to be a little bit more careful on that stretch. And along the same lines, when we've achieved some success by reducing the traffic rate below the statewide average, then there needs to be a similar amount of publicity touting our success.
Prior to approving which corridors are designated, or let's say we have approved, or you have approved, do you give a period of 30 days of warning signs that say this is a traffic safety corridor, or do you just pop the sign up, put double traffic on it, and call it a day?
Representative Gatto, I don't believe we've been asked that question. I think there would have to be an opening up period on that. Certainly the signs would appear. They'd say begin traffic safety corridor throughout the zone. There would be a number of signs that say traffic safety corridor, double traffic fines, and at the end it would say end. In fact, we've even had, it was expressed to us that when you enter one of these things, it should say highway traffic safety corridor next X miles.
That's so exactly that, what
yeah. But also, like on the Parks Highway through the Wasilla area, you've got numerous entries and exits from that thing. So it's going to have to be very well signed, as well as a lot of public information out there that says this is a safety corridor.
We have the statement, ignorance of the law is no excuse, but unless you tell somebody it's a special corridor, it would take a lot of signs. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and there are some of those areas that will take a lot of signage. But the goal is to increase the enforcement and try and get some control on the driver behavior.
Is there a time in the future when you do an evaluation and said, this hasn't worked one bit? We have exactly, give or take, a few percent. No change in the outcome, and then give up the program, or does the program have an eternal life?
Representative Gatto, at this point, the program has internal life. This will be continually monitored to see what is happening to the accident rates. The metric we use also has to do with the amount of traffic on the road. So as the volume of the traffic increases and the accidents increase, you may see it as a straight line. Where this has been used in other states, and there are about a half a dozen other states that have this mechanism, it's achieved some success.
Are we talking a 10% reduction or a substantial?
The one case I know about in Oregon was a substantial reduction.
More than 10%?
Yes.
Okay. You have more to go. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Representative Elkins has a question.
Mr. Chairman, I know this is not the right question, but which of the two bills is the department most comfortable with?
Representative Elkins, through the chair, the Senate version, they started out as identical, and in Senate transportation, we had an amendment to it that did a number of things. It added some miscellaneous clarifying language. It added a new paragraph which said that the DOT commissioner direction on what criterion factors to consider in designating the safety corridors. For example, the commissioner shall establish criteria that may consider accident data and reports, type and volume of vehicular traffic, engineering and traffic studies, and then a catch-all, other relevant factors. That was included in there. And it also, probably more importantly, it required consultation with the Commissioner of Public Safety. It's public safety that is, in most cases, going to be providing the increased enforcement with funding assistance from the Department of Transportation. So we can't do it unilaterally. We need to make sure that they have the ability to step up the enforcement in these areas. And the last thing that the Senate CS did was it added a new Section 6 requested by the court system regarding the accounting for double fines in some court locations where they don't have the ability to do the separate accounting.
Representative Elkins.
So, if I understood you right, in reality, the Senate 261 is a more complete bill and serves the public better, in your opinion?
Representative Elkins, that's correct. It got a head start over the House version, and as these bills work through, we try and work the bugs out and improve them. In fact, in Senate Finance today, there was one other small amendment made where it says that the Commissioner of Transportation shall consult with the Commissioner of Public Safety, and the previous version said may consult with other local, state, and federal agencies. Senate Finance changed it mandatory that we shall consult with other local, state, and federal agencies with responsibility for traffic safety.
John, I was reading through here as fast as I could. It looks like all of the changes occurred in Section 1 between the House version and the Senate version. And in fact, Section 1, Part A, if there was a Part A. It looks like in on line 8 we added from, in the Senate version, we added the commissioner shall establish all the way down to sentence 14 for public safety, and then picks up where the House version. So what I find is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines on page 1 and an additional 3 lines on page 2 that were simply additions, not changes. Unless I'm wrong, I don't see any changes, just additions.
I believe that's correct. The only change to was what Senate Finance did today.
What we have is the Senate Transportation version, not the Finance version. You're saying the Senate Finance added what, one word?
One word. They changed a may to a shall.
And where was that?
Do you know? That was on the Senate 261 version, line 13.
On page 1, line 13?
Yes.
Oh, from may consult with other to shall consult?
Shall consult.
Okay. All right, thank you. I just wanted to take a look at both and say maybe they were onto something and ask your opinion about whether the Senate version is closer to the kind of thing that we would want DPS to have in front of them.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Like I said, you know, the Senate version started off earlier, and we were able to work on those necessary changes.
Representative Elkins?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we table House Bill 417 at this time and wait for SB 261 to come over.
I will object for
discussion. Not debatable.
For discussion. Yeah.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we should move it and get it in the next committee on that other bill comes over. We already know what the language is in there.
Representative Newman was saying, why don't we just make an amendment to the House version to include all the language that is currently in the Senate version to match the Senate version, conceptual amendment number one. Then the report that leaves this committee is identical to the Finance Senate version. By the time they collide, they'll be identical bills and won't have any. If indeed we like the language that the Senate added, I've read the language. I don't certainly have an issue with it. I think the whole idea behind the bill is traffic safety corridors. The rest of it is how to discuss it, and not much change from our vision. So, if Representative Newman, did you want to make that motion?
Well, he's got a motion on.
Motion to table. I've objected. I guess do we need? I'm not sure.
But he's right. It's non-debatable.
It's not debatable.
Let me take a brief recess here. I'm going to ask a question. House Transportation will be reconvened. Representative Elkins, did you want to remove your tabling motion?
Yeah, I'm going to remove my tabling motion in lieu of some amendments to the House bill.
I'm going to offer an amendment that asks that we simply take conceptual amendment to take the Senate Finance version as amended and add it to our existing House bill. Is there an objection?
Is that your motion, Jim?
Yes.
Okay.
Is there an objection?
No objection.
No objection? Okay. With that, then the motion passes.
Motion to move the bill, Jim.
And we have now amended our bill to become a mirror of Senate Finance, which includes the shall rather than the may, and copies the Senate language where that language was not present in our bill.
You know, I think we owe somebody an apology. We did hear from.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, we still can, I guess. but I do apologize. We have online Robert Myers from Fairbanks. Robert, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can.
Actually, I'm going to ask you, did you follow what has just transpired with this bill?
I understand what's going on, yes.
Okay, and I apologize that you didn't get a chance to speak on it before we made the amendment, but the bill is still before us, so I'm giving you your opportunity to testify, so go ahead.
Okay. Do I need to identify myself? What's the procedure?
Yes.
Yeah, your name and whatever affiliation you have so we know if you're representing auto dealers or state troopers or whomever.
Okay. My name is Bob Myers, and I'm actually representing myself. I'm a father, a grandfather, a foster parent, and an employee of the Fairbanks School District, but my representation is under my own, is of myself. And what I am here to speak about is I would like to see an amendment made to this bill. The commissioner spoke a moment ago in his testimony. He referred to, or somebody did, SB 109 from last year and stuff, and I've been trying for 3 years to get legislation to make our school zones a lot safer, and through adding the double fines and the signage. And when I saw that the governor had introduced this bill, I thought this could be a vehicle that could accomplish that. What I would like to offer to see an amendment is in section one, the part A after the first question where it says end of the corridor. I would like to see school zones may be designated as traffic safety corridors. And so I'll give you some of my background why I'm seeing this. Why I'm wanting this. As a school employee, I'm a day custodian at Ann Wien Elementary School on Danby Street in Fairbanks. Now, Danby Street is a street that is normally 40 miles an hour speed limit, but during crossing times, it reduces to 20. There are two schools on Danby, Ann Wien Elementary that I work at and Randy Smith Middle School. There's also a large military housing unit across the street, and there's quite a bit of commercial traffic on Danby as well, because of a local commercial industrial area. One of the jobs I have, one of my duties as a custodian is a crossing guard each morning, and I've been doing this for the last 6 or 7 years. I've seen some pretty scary things out there. I see speeding on a daily basis, as well as passing on the right shoulder of the road. There's no left turn lanes turning into these two schools and the military housing, and cars will stop to make a left-hand turn and others will zip on around them, and I've seen that happen while I've had children in the crosswalk. Several times a year, cars will run through my stop sign as I'm taking kids across the street. A couple of years ago, one morning, I had just gotten some kids across the street. I was returning to my side of the street, and I heard the sound of screeching, of sliding tires on slick pavement, and it was wintertime, and I looked up to see a car coming broadside at me, and I ran to get out of its way. I've talked to other crossing guards in the Fairbanks area, and I hear many of the same kind of stories. About 3 years ago, while traveling around the states, I started to see the construction zones with the double fines, and I believe that same kind of thing is needed in our school zones. I know there's a small increase in the level of fines in school zones, but it doesn't even look like it's a 50% increase, and nobody knows about it. The commissioner was talking earlier about needing the traffic safety corridors need to be well signaged and everything, and those stating the double fines and what the parameters of the zones are and stuff. And we do have school zone signs, but they're pretty small. But nobody knows about the double, the increased fines, and I don't think they're adequate enough anyway. They haven't been working.
Mr. Myers?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to try and get to the meat of the issue. Are you wanting increased signage, increased fines in school zones, or in addition, turn pockets? I mean, you're looking for a great improvement in the area within the school zones. Am I on there?
My intent is to add the signage and the double fines. And the others were just examples of what I'm experiencing.
Okay.
So I'm not proposing that you put in lanes, turn lanes and those kind of things. I'm just proposing the double fines and the added enforcement that the commissioner was talking about in traffic safety corridors. When the seatbelt laws were put into place, we got the click it or ticket signs. And those that are in that school zone are nearly twice as large as the ones as the school zone signs. And so that again refers to the signage. I think, we need some good signs, and we need that added enforcement, and we need the added penalty. And so I'm here to ask that you would add the amendment that I just spoke about. I've been in contact with Representative Elkins' office, with Jennifer Baxter, and talked about the language with her, and I'm hoping that this can come about. This past year we had quite a number of alcohol-related deaths in the Fairbanks area, and so there are big changes being made to the DUI laws in. I don't want to wait until we have a child hit in a school zone. I want to prevent that. And that's kind of the end of my testimony. If anybody has any questions, I'm open to that.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Myers. I appreciate that. John, do you have a copy of the amendment?
No, I don't.
Let me give you a copy here. Because I'm going to ask you to comment on it.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd go ahead and introduce amendment number one or two.
Okay. We have before us amendment number two. I'll object for discussion. What we're dealing with is making every school zone into a traffic safety corridor, probably permanently, which would require then signage. And the question I have is, does the dollar fine in a school zone, is that effective in reducing the speeds in a school zone? Are the dollar fines in a school zone different? Is it so many dollars for the first mile or the first 5 miles? Can you tell me what it is? And then we'll want to see what the effect of doubling the fines are.
Yes, sir.
And identify yourself.
Yes, sir. For the record, I'm James Helgo, a lieutenant with the Alaska State Troopers. While I don't have that memorized, what the fine is, but it's a graduated fine, if you will, for every mile per hour over. So it's not a double fine, but it is an increased fine, more than a regular 25-mile-an-hour zone, and you were caught doing 10 miles an hour over the limit. If you were caught doing 10 miles an hour in a school zone, you would be fined more, although it would not be a double fine.
Okay, on school property, I've seen 5 miles an hour. Do you enforce, and that's right in the parking area, do you enforce those laws as well as on the street?
In the so your question is, do we enforce the speed limit in a parking lot?
Correct.
School?
Yeah.
Generally, we try to stick to the roadways. Parking lots oftentimes are considered type of private property. Now, in a school area, we would gladly be there if there was a concern. Generally, we're going to have more effect in calming that traffic, if you will, and getting voluntary mm-hmm. compliance with the speed limit if we're visible on the roadway as to being in a parking lot.
We could at any point double the fine in a school zone without doing anything else. Just raise the fine.
Yes, sir.
We don't have to put a sign up there that says double fines. It would simply be that fine is a different amount than the fine on Third Street,
yes, sir.
Something like that.
I think, through the chair, I think that the one of the problems in including school zones with traffic safety corridors is you dilute or you water down the intent of what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do here is get voluntary compliance with the posted speed limit by enforcement through public education and the inevitable double fine that's hanging over your head. If we included every school zone as a safety corridor, I think it would water this our intent down.
Did we find the double fine sign in construction zones to calm the traffic?
It is my opinion that, yes, it has. I've worked for municipal agencies as well as the state troopers, small town Alaska to more urban environments, and I have pulled numerous hours of overtime working in these zones, and I believe it does have a tremendous impact in slowing and calming down the traffic.
Yeah, and your concern, of course, if I hate to be repetitive, but the school zones would dilute the effect that we're hoping for.
But yeah, by creating these traffic safety or highway safety corridors, we're going after these areas in the state that the engineers with DOT have already identified as areas that have an increased or elevated level of serious physical injury, accidents, or death. That's what we're going after with the creation of these traffic safety corridors, much like some of the other states have done in the lower 48.
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused how adding this amendment dilutes what we're trying to do. The legislation is still there for what we're trying to do. This just broadens it a little bit.
Yes, sir.
I don't see how it dilutes the...
And perhaps that's a poor word usage on my part. What I think would happen is if you have darn near every place in the state or any place there's a school zone designated as a safety corridor, a traffic safety corridor, then when the motoring public drives through Wasilla or drives down Kennedy Goose Bank Road or down another area that has been signed, perhaps they get used to seeing those signs. Perhaps then it loses its impact of how important and the increased enforcement in those areas.
Isn't the bottom line public safety?
Yes, sir, it is.
Would you be in favor of posting a sign on the existing school sign that says double fines and not designating it as a corridor, or would that have the same effect?
Anything we can do to get that compliance with the speed limit in any place in the state, and especially school zones, is a great thing, and we would support that 100%.
The problem that we encountered earlier was, what the heck is a school zone? If you're in Haines, where is the beginning, where is the end? If you're in downtown Anchorage, you got flashing lights with people waving it.
Hey,
that's
light.
What it takes.
I got a light.
Not for your school zones. And then when you're in between those things, you might have a sign that says school zone, and you might not have one at the other end. The designated area for school zones is troubling to a driver, I have to tell you. If it's clear, I don't have a problem. I wish it was clear every single time. I know in Wasilla we get near the middle and high schools. It's signed. But I'm not sure, as soon as you turn off on Cruzy, whether or not you're still in the school zone, because you are passing an intersection that goes back to the middle school, but you're a long way from the school, and I don't know. The don't know, for me, is the major issue. I wanna know when I can speed up and when I have to not speed up but actually slow down. I want to know. And we don't do that very clearly. That's my concern about this. To be honest, I submitted a bill for double fines in school zones. It didn't go anywhere. Representative Elkins now wants to add this to this bill. And so it's hard for me to not support it. But I want to listen to your testimony about you're the guy that works the street. I'm more interested in the guy that works the street than I am in anyone else about this, except the guy that's been to jail four times. I'm interested in him, too.
Thank you.
Representative Newman, question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not quite so sure about the amendment and the fact that I think school zones have their own areas, as was suggested earlier by Trooper Helgo, which I may add, I feel quite safe because this is the third meeting that we've been at together in different areas of the state here in the last several weeks. But, you know, I think school zones have their own issues that come with them. Some of those, depending on how far off the school is from the road, Some of those depending on what time of day it is, of whether they have a traffic zone in there or not. And to make it an overall blanket on top of legislation that we already have that looks specifically at school zones. If we want to change that, maybe we ought to go back and look at that school zone traffic plan legislation. But I think we've already got a system in place. And I'd be very interested in the, sometimes there's a cause and effect that happens in the legislature. And I'd be very interested in what Scott Thomas, your safety, traffic safety coordinator for the DOT, has to say about this, because a lot of times if you slow this down at the wrong time, you're actually more dangerous. And so we sometimes you cause problems where you really don't want to be causing problems, and it ends up to be even a more dangerous situation. So without somebody to hear from, somebody who's actually in DOT's safety program, a coordinator of theirs, I think that would be crucial to hear from them before I make any commitment to this amendment.
Representative Newman, would you like to hear? Kurt Smith, a state traffic safety officer, is here and would certainly speak along the same lines that Scott Thomas would. Would you like to hear from him?
Sure.
I've got three.
Representative Thomas had a question.
Right. Before we get you on the mic, Representative Thomas, you have a question for a...
No, I just want to make a comment in regards to what the Lieutenant was saying. I think if we bury this in the bill, it won't get the significance it would if it's by itself, a separate bill addressing the same issues. And one other issue I had is that in regards to this is our... Going to Douglas, there's a, I don't know if it's called the Breeze Inn or the, there's a yellow sign there, and I come over that every day, and I'm allowed to do 35, 40 on the other side, but most people don't even slow down and that light's blinking. They go right on by, and I slow down and then let two or three people come down off the hill to get in there. But I think this is a big enough issue that there's more than one area that needs to be recognized, and that's a bus safety area that I've seen at least totally violated time and time again, and somebody must have complained because they had the city cops sitting there the other day, and it was finally where traffic was moving at a snail pace. But I believe, Representative Elkins, that this is a good enough amendment. It probably deserves its own bill, I would say, instead of burying it in this one. And I'm going to have to leave here in a couple of minutes.
And so am I. So I'm going to listen to your testimony and then try to close this down.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, go ahead. Who are you?
This is Bob Myers in Fairbanks again. I would like to just make a comment if I could.
If it's a comment that takes 30 seconds, I'll listen.
That's about what it'll take, sir.
Go ahead.
Okay. The concern was that we have to make every school zone a traffic safety corridor, and that's not my intent at all. I know here in Fairbanks that there are elementary schools that are in neighborhood that are don't have the high traffic and the speed of the particular streets, but there are others that are dangerous, and so that's why I'm saying school zones may be designated, and so that when it's warranted that there is a problem, that this statute could be used to protect those children.
Thanks, Mr. Myers. Appreciate that.
You bet.
Would you go ahead and identify name and affiliation?
Kurt Smith, State Traffic and Safety Engineer, DOTPF. Representative Gatto, I agree with Representative Thomas that really these are two distinct issues, and they're pretty much apples and oranges. The definition of what a school zone is and when the safety zone would apply, there is a big one. We have different signs. There are several different considerations. And I'd recommend that they be treated separately.
Okay. Is that it? Good. Did you move amendment number two?
No.
Or just pass it out?
You just handed it out.
Okay. Did you want to move amendment number two?
Not at this time.
Not because I would like to entertain a motion to move the bill from committee. So if you wanted to introduce it, this is...
I'll remove my amendment.
Okay. Do I have a motion, Representative Newman?
Chair, I move House Bill 417, Version A, with individual recommendations and attached listings from committee.
As amended.
As amended.
Other objections? Seeing and hearing none, the amended version.
Amended version.
Identical to the Senate version, which must make that smile just about as good a smile as we can get. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Appreciate that.
I see your name is on physical notes.
I didn't see it.
I said, this guy sounds familiar. I know where I've seen that.